When we see the first century Christians and they were casting out demons, and the major reason was because Jesus was bringing in the kingdom of God and showing the world he was the Messiah. So everywhere you see deliverance, everywhere you see exorcism, needs to be a ministry basically of evangelism.
The Profile with Premier Christianity Magazine.
Hello, you're listening to The Profile here on Premier Christian Radio. I'm your host, Sam Hales, editor of Premier Christianity Magazine. That's the UK's leading Christian magazine, and it sponsors this show and makes it all possible. Every week here on The Profile, we speak to a different Christian about their life, faith, and testimony. And I'm pleased to say that my guest on the show this week is Chris DeFlorio. Chris worked as a plainclothes officer in the New York City Police Department in the early noughties, working in Harlem. Along with his wife, Chris now combines his first responder skills with his Christian faith as the couple travel around investigating and helping families with demonic issues in their lives. Chris is the author of a new book, Called Into Darkness, Two NYC First Responders Battle the Supernatural. And we're going to hear some of the story behind that book today, as well as more about Chris's life. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hey, Sam. Thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you on. We always like to start at the beginning. So do you want to just tell me a little bit about what life was like for you growing up, and I guess where the Christian faith first came into the picture for you?
Yeah, growing up, you know, coming from the Italian background, you know, I was born and raised Catholic. You know, we didn't go to church much, but, you know, we were deemed Catholic. I wasn't very religious. So when I got into my 30s, I would say, you know, I was seeking God, and, you know, I was trying everything I could to find him. I was going, sitting in churches, reading the Bible, but it just didn't stick. You know, I knew there was something, there was someone out there. And when I met Harmony, we started dating and we came together. We both had prior marriages. We were unsaved. We had two children that we were bringing into the relationship from each side. And what happened is that, you know, God works in amazing ways. You know, he'll sometimes bring you to your knees to really show you how to look up. And what happened with us was, which really is the amazing part of this story over everything, is that a friend brought us to church, evangelical church, Pentecostal church, and we were saved at the same service, soundly saved. Everything changed from that moment. And I would say I think I was 38 years old when that happened, July 12th. And, you know, I'll never forget it. It changed my life. You know, those of us who are saved, we know when God does.
What was it about what you heard or you experienced in that church service? Is there anything that sort of stays with you to this day of that was really what caused me to respond in that moment?
Oh yeah, it was. You can't put your finger on one thing. It was the whole experience. It was hearing the gospel. It was the worship music. I never even heard anything like that before. Coming from a Catholic background, you walk into a Pentecostal church, you see people up there with guitars and, you know, people with raising their hands. I didn't know what to expect. And it took me by surprise. And at first I was very skeptical. By the end of the service, we were both up there crying our eyes out for 15 minutes. And that message that pastor gave just spoke to our soul. Like, you get that feeling that you're the only one that God is speaking to in that service. You know, we all feel like that. And that's what happened. And we left that church, different people that day.
Incredible. And tell me a bit about your kind of career at this point, because you've got really interesting career background working, I guess, in the emergency services in New York. Tell me a bit about where that desire came from and how your career developed over time.
Well, what happened is I was being geared to be a major league ball player my whole life. My father he played for the Oakland A's in the minor league systems, didn't make it to the majors. And I was the next step. You know, I was the one he was grooming. And through a tragic accident in my 20s, that ended. And, you know, I went to college, I got a degree and everything, but, you know, my passion was baseball. So without that, I didn't know what I was doing. And one day I was working at a hospital in a file room. you know, just trying to figure out what I'm going to do with my life and working a job. And I saw an ambulance pull in and they were doing CPR on a patient and something moved me. And I said, you know, I want to make a difference like that. So I joined the New York City Fire Department as a paramedic. And in the late 90s, I worked in the South Bronx. And the thing, you know, the events I saw are just life changing. And I knew that there was something else. Years later, I said, you know, I'm being pulled into another direction. To me, it was something different, a different way of helping people. And that was with the NYPD, the New York City Police Department, in 2003. And I wanted to actually get into helping people in more of a crime kind of way of getting involved in helping them fight against what, you know, people or you know, actions taken against them in that kind of manner. And that's where everything began.
I'm aware we're talking about a period of time which would have been just after 9/11. Do you have memories of that time being in New York? How did that unfold from your experience? Yeah.
That was terrible. It was a moving moment, especially living out in New York City. You know, I live out in Long Island, but I worked in the city my whole life. At that time, I was actually working as a paramedic with JFK Airport. And that was a very big thing because, you know, there was a lot of incidents with the planes. Right after that happened, 9/11, I felt a calling to go back to New York City. And I went right down to the office in the city and I explained to them, I said, listen, I worked here before and I want to come back. And I remember that, you know, they took me right back. We were all, you know, people were feeling that call back into the city to help and be part of, you know, mending the city and helping people. And that was a very tough time. It's something I actually never spoke about before. I was never asked. I was in the fire department building, the main building, during the time all the funerals were going on for the firefighters that passed away. And it was an emotional time. Just you can't put a word on the feeling that was going on in the city at that time. But I it's somewhere I wanted to be. I wanted to be back there. Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting that tragedy actually drew you back. Was there a sense of, I mean, you used the word calling, which is quite a Christian or spiritual word. Was there this sense in which kind of you felt God wanted you to be back in that city and I guess provide a level of help or healing after a disaster that had affected so many people really around the world, not just in New York City, but it had such a profound impact in that moment of time that you felt God was calling you back into the fray?
I would say, you know, to be honest, at that time, it was more of a humanly kind of a feeling, you know, to be part. Because at that time, you got to remember, I wasn't saved. So as much as you have a love for people, you don't understand that love that God gives you to love God and love neighbor. So I wanted to be back because it is something, obviously, that God put in me. You know, I didn't know it at the time. It was to be part of something, always to be something bigger, to help people, to make more of a difference. And I believe, yeah, that I know it was him. At the time, I probably didn't recognize it, but he gets all the glory for that.
Yeah. Yeah. So obviously you had this incredible experience with Harmony in this church, and you mentioned you were called from being a first responder into a different kind of helping people, deliverance ministry. For those for whom that term might be brand new and wouldn't necessarily know what I mean by that, how do you explain to someone, you know, who may not even be a Christian, say, what do you do? What do you do, Chris, for a living? Yeah. You've got quite an unusual response. I guess what comes out of your mouth isn't what people are used to hearing.
Well, yeah. I mean, to discuss that, I have to go back just a touch because I didn't just jump into that, you know, from the police to jump, you know, being called by God and now doing deliverance or exorcisms. You know, God called us into a ministry of evangelism and we hit the streets basically right away after we were saved, handing out tracts, meeting people where they were out in the streets. Street evangelism was a passion God gave me, reaching the lost. So we'd reach any type of person, but the homeless actually stood out with us a lot. Really had a compassion for the homeless. We started homeless ministries. The first one we ever had was Seek and Save Outreach, which is still going today from 2009. And we helped a lot of people. Now that, you know, that was from 2009 all the way up to 2018. What happened is I went to Africa And that's where things changed. And I got into this field. I won't get, you know, too much into that story. But yeah, I started getting more into a ministry of taking on the devil face to face. You know, we kind of do it in a secondary kind of way when we're loving people and pulling them from the grips. This was a ministry. When you get into deliverance, the term deliverance, now you're getting into it where people are actually being firsthand oppressed, harassed, terrorized by the devil. And where we started to step in, where God called us into from, I would say, some amazing supernatural events beforehand, where we would intercede for these people in a humanly fashion to step in where they're being, they need help, they can't break free, and then being messengers of God only, you know, calling on God, we would come in and, you know, through God's grace, drive out whatever's there to help them.
It's really interesting that you had some experience of this in Africa, because I've heard people remark before that in that particular continent, the spiritual appears more overt. And some people have said, well, there's just more demonic activity. Others have said there's not necessarily any more demonic activity. It's just more overt than it is in the West. Do you have a view on that as to why things like deliverance ministry seem very prevalent in other, not just Africa, but other parts of the world where this is perhaps more normal for Christians to talk about demonic oppression and casting out evil spirits? In large parts of the West, this is either unknown, unheard of, or just doesn't happen in a lot of churches. Do you have a view on why that might be?
Well, first, I think it happens equally everywhere. You notice it a lot in, you know, places like Africa, because it's a very spiritual place. When I went there, you know what it is? We take a lot of things for granted, you know, where we live. And when you go to a place like that, you really see people firsthand depending on God. That spiritual aspect, that spiritual understanding is there. It's tangible. And I think when you're drawn into that, you're drawn into the understanding of the spiritual warfare. And you have witch doctors, you know, you have different religions. A lot of the Afro-Caribbean religions came out of there, where you have Palo Mayombe, you know, is one that people never really talk about. Santeria. These religions are spiritual, where they're looking to a different being than God. Okay, so there is an aspect of people seeking deliverance, seeking help. Maybe it's not from God, and they run into a lot of problems. Now, the thing out in the West is that it's prevalent here. It really is. And a big problem I've been running into, and is that people cannot get help in the church. I don't know why. I talk to a lot of pastors, and they're not really equipped in this aspect of, you know, deliverance or exorcism. And it is really happening here a lot. One thing to really to look at is, if we look biblically, okay, when we see the first century Christians and they were casting out demons, a big reason and the major reason was because Jesus was bringing in the kingdom of God and showing the world he was the Messiah. So everywhere you see deliverance, everywhere you see exorcism, needs to be a ministry basically of evangelism, bringing in the gospel. Now, it seems in America, I'll tell you, we're going backwards. And what it's been said in the beginning was that in these missionary countries, you know, all the way into Africa, these other countries, in the beginning, they saw a lot of possession because they were bringing the gospel in, just like the first century. Now, unfortunately, in America, I will tell you that we're going backwards and we're losing God, and more people are becoming possessed, becoming oppressed, because now, again, it's like a first century. It's a missionary country in reverse, and we're bringing that gospel and we're seeing people being delivered and coming to Christ.
I'd love to hear a bit more about your personal story. You mentioned that you were doing street evangelism for some years, I guess, before this whole kind of field opened up. Can you just tell me a bit about what this looks like for you, I guess, day to day. I think I was reading that you have calls coming in and people are asking you for help and you might have to travel across the country. What are the sorts of things that people are telling you, and how exactly do you help them? I imagine every situation is probably a little bit different, but what are the common themes?
They really range. It's amazing the spectrum of calls. So you'll get calls. There's three stages real quick: infestation, oppression, and possession. So you'll get calls in each stage. I'll get people calling saying basically their home is haunted. I'll get a lot of calls that people are being oppressed, where they're becoming sick or they're being injured. They're being attacked. I get a lot of calls that people tell me they're possessed. And that's a whole separate category, because that's a very long interview and there's a lot to that one. But I've been getting a lot of calls of late. The majority of parents calling for their children, that their children are being oppressed or they're being targeted. There's something talking to them. The child is complaining of seeing a dark figure, hearing voices. I get a lot of those lately. But every call, I'll tell you, it really, the way I started is it's a very long phone call or a Zoom, because I really have to know about the person. There's a lot to it. This ministry, this part of ministry has to be, you know, it's, you have to be very responsible, because I see a lot of people out there, I'll tell you, that are irresponsible, and they're making situations worse for people who may have maybe a mental illness or mistaken of what's going on. So I take a very, you know, long look at this before I deem something that is spiritual or demonic.
Yeah, I was going to ask you actually about mental health. It's interesting you brought it up, because I think this is a whole area that I've certainly noticed Christian leaders and churches kind of growing in understanding, like the rest of culture in the last decade or so. And I think it can be a dilemma for some Christians or church leaders. What am I dealing with here? Is this a mental health problem where I need to send you to a good doctor? Is there a spiritual dynamic? Is there maybe even a bit of both? I mean, how do you begin to discern what's really going on? And do you have any wisdom for church leaders that might be grappling with this pastorally with people where they're just not sure if it's a spiritual component, a mental health component, or somewhere between the two even?
Yeah, I think, you know, a good place to start, and I do this basically in my ministry, in my interviews, send them to get checked out medically first. You want to take away, it's like being, you know, in a paramedic field, you want to rule things out. So somebody who has shortness of breath, you don't just think it's asthma, because it could be a cardiac problem, something much bigger, or vice versa. So you want to rule things out. And I require people to tell me, you know, if they want me to help them, you know, I tell them my background, what I do. Harmony, actually, if I didn't say, she worked on a New York City Fire Department ambulance as well. So she was an EMT. So we have a very strong background, and she's still in healthcare. So I want to know their medical background. I want to know what medications they're on, if they're compliant with the medications, if they've spoken to somebody. You really want to take a look at that. And, you know, after doing this for years, and honestly, thousands and thousands of phone calls, you start to, you know, you understand who you're talking to. And even being a police officer, interviewing people, crimes and criminals, you get a sense of discernment. And, you know, sometimes if you're dealing with somebody who may be emotionally disturbed, and that's a whole separate, you know, I don't just shut the door on them. I get them help, and I talk to them, and we get them to the right place. But yeah, I see a lot of, especially in the evangelical church, sometimes it's overly spiritual, and you got to be careful, because, you know, if somebody is suffering from mental illness and you just tell them, go home and cast it out in the name of Jesus, you know, you're opening up a can of worms here for that person. And, you know, you better be prepared to care for them, not just one and done. And I'm going to tell you, 99.9% of the calls I get, the first thing I ask is, did you talk to your pastor? Did you talk to your priest? And I say, yes. And they couldn't help me, or they didn't believe me. So this is why we're here. My wife and I are here. I would rather not be. I would rather just lead them right to the church, because that's where you need to go. But they're not finding help. And this is the dilemma that we're finding right now.
Yeah, you feel like you need to plug that gap if people aren't getting help in their local church. And what do you, but why do you think Why do you think that's happening? Because obviously, if you or I were to meet any church leader, they would tell us, well, I want to help people. That's why I'm a church leader. So there's clearly a desire to help people, and yet these people aren't being helped. So what's going on there?
Well, since you asked, it's a tough question, but there's a truth to it in a lot of churches. I won't say all of them. And their agenda is not to deal with this. I've been in the church for a long time now, and I've been in a few churches, and I know a lot of pastors and people. And from what I see is a lot of the churches, you know, you want to make it a safe, fun place for families. You want to come in, you want to have your events, your barbecues, you know, you want it to be a different kind of place. You want to talk about the devil on a Sunday sermon, maybe to give it a little spice. You know what I mean? But the reality of the devil, a lot of pastors don't want to deal with. They don't want to bring that in. And I'll tell you, we got a lot of pushback saying, oh, they shouldn't even be dealing with that. They should be leaving it. You know, and I look and I said, if not us, then who? This is God called all of us, the Christians. This is who battles the devil, not unsaved people. And, you know, this is what I've been finding. And a lot of it, honestly, is in the book. It was a theme in the book. And it was from the Catholic perspective, how I, you know, we basically got laughed out of the evangelical church, who I was a leader in when I came back from Africa with this whole new calling, went to the Catholic church for help for one of the cases in the book, and they wouldn't help because they have their own rules and standards. There was so much politics involved, and that's the other thing, is politics has infiltrated the church that people are left suffering. You know, we got to remember, at the end of the day, there's people suffering, families, and the stories I hear, and children suffering, 10-year-olds, and some of them are terrible. It leaves you, you know, sleepless at times. And I think, you know, I think the church needs to wake up and you know, say, I'm going to get involved. I'm going to at least investigate this and spend time with people. And that's what they need to do.
Which of these topics has not been covered on PremierChristianity.com? UFOs, near-death experiences, Doctor Who, Christ's return, the faith of celebrities, and Andrew Tate. Trick question. We don't shy away from any topic. We cover faith as it affects us in daily life and give you the bigger picture. PremierChristianity.com. Special podcast subscription offer at PremierChristianity.com/podcast.
I'd love to ask you about, I think, what was quite a well-known case in America at the time, in Connecticut in 2021. For us who haven't come across this story before, can you just explain what exactly went on there and what your involvement was? Because I think it might help unpack some of the stuff you're involved in day to day.
Well, that was the most interesting case we've had to date. It was almost like a quote unquote textbook case because it had everything, all the proof you would need for everything off the bat. And the one thing I didn't, you know, give to the media at the time was a child was being targeted. You know, I told them about the big, you know, events they would want to hear. There was the prior owner of the home was a satanic witch. And we found that out through interview, confirmation, and going into one of the rooms in the attic, and they were demonic sigils and ritual tools and salt circles, candles. So we caught a lot of activity on recording, which really was, you know, took us by surprise as well. But, you know, the major part of this case, which that's what I put in the book. And like I said, I didn't give it to the media because my first thing is to protect the people I'm helping. And, you know, the family did want me to talk about the child at this point. So I did. But it was a young boy who was actually being targeted by this demon. And the amazing part, you know, people are going to have their opinions that this isn't real. How can they know? There was a specific demon who presents a certain way through history. Now, this 4-year-old child with special needs was mimicking this demon. The same things that you would read about, they would have no way of knowing. And it was just one of the most amazing cases I had. And it was the most, it was a very big priority because it was moving very fastly through those three stages, infestation, oppression, and now was looking to possess the child. And that's where I went to the Catholic Church and I said, listen, I think I'm in over my head here and you guys need to get involved. And I talked to the one priest and he said he's on board. He goes, listen, you sound like you're the real deal. And he said, this is the real deal, this case. He goes, I'll bring it to the exorcist. And by the time I got to the Catholic exorcist, he wanted me to remove myself because I wasn't in good standing with the Catholic Church. You know, I didn't go do all the sacraments every day or whatever. And I told the family because it's their right to make a decision. They said, they want me to remove myself and they want you to call them. And they said, absolutely not. You know, we had a bond. You know, we were in the trenches with them at this point. Things were happening in that house. We were all being affected. And I had to make a decision with Harmony of what to do. And we stayed and helped the family.
So this all began with you getting a call from these parents who were just concerned about their child. And then you went up into the attic and you found all this satanic sort of stuff in the attic.
Well, what happened is one of the sisters called and she said, my sister's been having activity in her home. She was actually caring for her nephew. She was a grandmother and an aunt. You know, she was a little older. And so she was caring for her nephew. They caught on film noise in the attic one night, walking along the floorboards and crazy noises. So they sent it to me and they sent me pictures of the sigils up there that they found because they went up first. And I said, wow, this doesn't seem good. And then when I interviewed the aunt the next day, the homeowner, she told me about the child, which I didn't know about, and told me a lot of activity that was happening. There was something where the prior owner, who was actually evicted from the home, was coming back trying to get in to get her stuff in the attic, and also leaving symbols made out of sticks on the driveway, which were very relevant to this case. Yeah, it was something. So we headed right over there and it turned into, I think, 4 or 5 visits before we can get any breakthrough.
Yeah. And you mentioned you tried to get some help from the Catholic Church. That didn't work out. And so it was just you. And then you said that you stuck around, you helped the family. I'd love to hear more about what that entails. So what does that look like? How do you help? And how do you ultimately get rid of this demonic activity from a house?
Well, you know, it's interesting because there are people, I'm sure some of your listeners out there, they understand deliverance from the evangelical side and exorcism from the Catholic side. I'm in the middle. See, I'm at the point where I don't adhere to one side. I'm here for the glory of God. And if I believe something is going to glorify God, is going to help people, help family, I'm going to do it. So I will use things from both sides. So, you know, we come in, we interview, we investigate. I come in, you know, I guess it's the police training, paramedic training of, you know, investigating. I'll have cameras, everywhere. And I'll go do an investigation around the home and then I'll come home and I have a computer system with monitors where I'll, you know, come back and look at everything we captured just to know what I'm dealing with and get a more of an understanding. That's that part. And then there's a spiritual sense of the family. You know, where are they spiritually? Am I dealing with Christians who maybe have fallen away a little, or strong Christians or are unsaved? Because at the end of the day, like I said in the beginning, this is a ministry of evangelism. So that's how we help them. Each step is to bring them closer to God. So, you know, I don't come in and I don't ram it down anybody's throat. Because it's not about a power trip. It's not about just telling them this is how it's going to be or I'm not helping you. It's showing them the gospel in the message and in love. You know, loving your neighbor. We don't charge. You know, we don't take any money. People do donate at times, but we don't take – I'll never ask for money because it's what Jesus did for us, correct? So he didn't charge. he did it for us out of love. So the whole idea of it is to come in and show them the power of God. And that's what we're trying to do. So when we get to the end of it, we bless the home. You know, we'll read certain blessings and then we obviously pray what the Spirit gives us at times. But the whole idea is that at the end of this, they're going to come to know Christ. That's ultimately what's going to deliver them. And that's the first thing I tell them. If you don't have Jesus, if you don't come to God, it's not going to stop. This isn't a supernatural ritual You know, this is bringing the gospel in. So that's what we really do. And, you know, sometimes it doesn't work. And I know it's not at times because I can see the people are resistant to God. They just want help and go back to their life. Or there's some people, I've seen people get saved. And my old partner, who actually made fun of me when we worked for the NYPD, you know, to joke around, when he saw the change, years later, saw my wife and I doing what we do, and we had to help him. And he got saved, soundly saved, where he's an encouragement to me now. So God, it's an amazing, each case is amazing because you never know what's going to happen.
I think that's fascinating. You see it as evangelism. And as you say, I guess there are cases where unless the people involved are willing to submit to God and welcome, quite literally welcome the light into their home, then some of this darkness is gonna carry on. And I think that's, if I may put it this way, it almost sounds like quite an easy way of doing evangelism, because you don't need to prove to that person that that there's a spiritual reality. They're already on board at that point, aren't they?
You couldn't hit it on the head any better. I tell people this is the easiest evangelism I've ever done in my life. Like I said, we did the toughest evangelism, street evangelism. My wife and I went to the Capitol out in Washington and debated atheists, which is very tough. You know, you're walking into these homes now and they're saying, what must I do to be saved? And I said, wow, this is amazing. You know, I have pastors, like I said, I can't believe you do that. How can you do something like that? I'd be too scared, or you shouldn't do that. People are getting saved. All I got to do is really just give the gospel at times, because they'll say, listen, I said, they'll say, I'll do anything you tell me to do. And I have them reading. And there's times where we do, we carry them along after the cases, and I'll teach them the Bible. So it's the most fulfilled ministry that I've ever had, because you're seeing lives changed, people coming to God, and they're being delivered. So you can't ask for anything more.
Yeah, it's amazing. I wanted to ask a couple of questions kind of on behalf of those who might be more skeptical or unsure, because, as I say, I think for a lot of Christians, they're in churches where words like demonic just not really used, or deliverance ministry, certainly exorcism. There are churches that just will not talk about this stuff, and some Christians that just will be highly skeptical as to whether this could be real. There might be an openness that in Jesus' day, he was obviously casting out the demonic. There might even be an openness that's happening in other parts of the world. But the idea that here in the UK or in the US that you could have demons, haunted houses, I think for a lot of people, it just sounds like something straight out of a horror movie, as opposed to something that's a reality. How much of an interest do you have in convincing those Christians, and what are the kind of answers that you would give? Or is it just a subject you're not that interested in dealing with because you think, well, I've got my ministry and you can believe what you want to believe?
No, I am interested, because, and that's why I speak out like this, because, you know, people need to understand it's real. And listen, 101, you can't be a Christian to believe in God and not in the devil. One doesn't go without the other. He's the author of evil. This is, you know, a major reason why we have a fallen world that we live in. And the devil's running around rampant. It's a fact. And like I said earlier, I believe the churches are keeping a lot of this out. And it's hurting people. I don't know why. There might be another agenda why they're not doing it. But, you know, we have to understand that we need to understand our enemy. In anything you do, you have to understand who you're dealing with. Like you said, you know, they're not hearing the word demonic. They're not learning about it. You know, they're being told, well, don't think about it. Don't read about it. Just forget him. And the problem is a lot of people do not understand the capabilities of the demons, of the devil. Sometimes they give him too much power, which he doesn't have. You know, God is the only supernatural being in existence. The devil is not supernatural. The word is preternatural. He's beyond nature, which means he's stronger than us, but under God. And that we have to understand that he's on a leash. When we look at the book of Job, he can only do so much, but he needs God's permission. People need to understand these things. So we need to understand the nature of the demonic, where they came from, what they can do. Are there different demons? Yes, Jesus talked about it. This kind can only be driven out with prayer and fasting. He was saying there's different kinds of demons. We have to understand why they're in our lives, how they got here. You know, is there a reason why there's a demon in our lives? And a lot of times we have to understand that God is permitting it. And what does God do? He's like a good parent, right? We take our kids to the doctor. They get a shot. The kid looks at you like you're the worst parent in the world. But meanwhile, you're saving that child, right? God uses things to wake us up and draw him closer to us. So there's a lot of education in this field that needs to be spoken about. And when I do speak at a few churches, especially on Long Island, you know, they're really, they take it in and they want more. And I just wish the pastors would speak on this more.
Yeah. And do you have any examples of Christians being demonically oppressed and any stories of how you've been able to alleviate that? And I suppose lessons, because I guess, you know, there'll be Christians listening to this who think, I'm petrified of this stuff. I'm terrified. I don't want a demon anywhere near me. What do I need to do to make sure none of that stuff comes anywhere near me and my family? And what are the lessons from your ministry? You say, well, these are the doors that have let this stuff in, and this is how we've dealt with it.
The first thing to understand is the door that opens this all up is when we go to anything but God. You know, when we start to seek something to help us get what we need, that's not God. God isn't moving fast enough. He's not answering my prayer. I'm going to go this way. That opens up a door. And I'm just speaking Christian-wise. Because when you go to unbelievers, they're using Ouija boards. They're doing a lot of witchcraft. That, forget about it. That's just an obvious opening because they're going right to the devil. But for Christians, you know, when I would say, if you want to stay away from oppression, if you want to stay away from these kind of events, it's just, you got to stay close to God. You got to walk with God. And when these things happen, you recognize it, because we're all going to be attacked. You know, we get oppressed at times. We have issues in our home where we know, all right, you know, something's happening here. You just got to draw closer to God, right? And he'll draw closer to you. And that's what you need to do. So my advice to Christians is just walk with God and understand there are things as well we don't understand. Again, when we look at Job, you know, the most blameless person in the land, what was happening? He didn't even know what was happening, but he was going to be the tool, the vessel to glorify God. There's a lot to it. So you just seek the word of God, read the word of God, pray, and God will reveal it to you, I believe.
What's been the best day of your ministry, and what's been the worst?
Best day is there was a man on the northeast portion of the United States. We had a case who was being oppressed, and it turned out, I spoke a little about it in the book, touched on it, something that happened with Harmony. That was actually, it's interesting, the best and the worst case. Something happened there that revealed to us that he was possessed, because something I'll never do again. I left my wife alone interviewing the man for a moment as I was going around the house, and the man changed right there. We got it on recording too. And the demon actually came right out, threatening her in a way that has changed her to this day. And the best part of that was at the end of it, he got saved. The man had illnesses. He had injuries. He had broken relationships with his family. And the last day we were there, you know, I just threw everything out the window, went straight to prayer on the man. And the honest truth and his witnesses, it's amazing, is that the man said that when we were done, he felt a light coming on him. And he went back to the doctors. And they said, I don't understand. You don't need any surgery now. His family began to call him, his children, his ex-wife, and restore relationships. And I talked to the friend who actually brought us to this case. And he tells me all the time, he's a changed man. Even their old friends from high school who meet the guy now say he's changed. What happened to him? That was the most rewarding, you know, case, you know, from start to finish we've ever had.
It strikes me that in your work as a first responder, there's an emotional cost to that kind of a job, right? The traumatic things that you witness. And it sounds like in this ministry, that comes at a cost as well. You mention, you know, a demon literally threatening your wife. What's the cost of this kind of ministry for you and for your family?
Yeah, there is a cost, you know, and I tell anybody, I get a lot of calls from people who say, hey, I want to do what you do. I want to join. And I said, count the cost, just like you said. You know, it's like Jesus told us when we're Christians, count the cost. you're stepping in to a war that's been going on since the beginning of time, directly, the front lines. There's no doubt about it. You're exposing the devil and you're setting them free from being a hostage. And yeah, we've seen, you know, there's a lot of things that's happened. I haven't spoken about this. I don't think I spoke publicly about it yet, but my daughter, who has twins, had a mirror fall off, and she had a few experiences, but one was where a mirror just fell off the wall and almost hit the twins, the babies. And we had to go over there actually and bless the home. They'll try in the beginning, you know, it's funny because they try all the parlor tricks. My house was like a circus in the beginning. There was appliances going off. There were noises in the middle of the night. You knew things. It was tangible. Things were going on. The more you get into this ministry, and again, like I said, how important it is to understand your enemy. I understand where they are now. So if I hear something or whatever, I don't even acknowledge it. I don't give any energy to it. I don't care. So you really got to be invested in this ministry if you're going to do it. It's not a part-time thing. It's nothing to be curious about. Understand you're stepping into the war, you're interceding for people, and you're bringing, you know, you're willing to do whatever you got to do to bring glory to Christ, no matter what.
Yeah. It's really interesting you mentioned it's nothing to be curious about, because I think there's a famous C.S. Lewis quote about this, about the two equal and opposite errors of either having no interest at all in the demonic or actually having too much interest can be a problem. And you talk about that kind of curiosity that's actually quite inappropriate for a Christian. And one of the dangers of even talking about this stuff is, I think for some people, they get a bit too invested, a bit too curious, when actually, as you say, that's not the direction you want to be pointing people towards. You want to point people towards Jesus. You don't want to give the devil almost too much attention. Is that a tricky balance at times?
Yeah, no, it's right on. Because, you know, if you look at my home, you wouldn't even know we're involved in this ministry. You know, I have four children, wife, and we have a good time. I don't talk about this. You wouldn't know. It's life as usual. We're going to work, raising children, laughing, eating dinner, going to movies. I don't give any attention to it. I do my own study time. I know what, you know, I know my ministry. When the phone call comes in, you know, then it's on. Then I go and I sit and I talk with the people. When it's over, I go back to my family life. That's the balance you need to have. You know, the devil is not under every rock. I heard it once say he's under every other rock. But, you know, you have to have a very good balance spiritually in your life. You know, it's more, you know, I focus more on Jesus. You know, that's where I want to be. That's where I get my peace. You know, that's how I start my day and end my night. You know, it's everything. This is, you know, just part of, this is the battle that we're in. But no, you know, it's not, I'm not very super curious about it, where I'm excited about it.
We are, we're coming up to a time in the calendar this autumn of Halloween. Well, I know Halloween is marked slightly differently between the UK and the US, but here in the UK, a lot of churches will put on alternative Halloween things. They're often called light parties, and use it for evangelism, use it to reach out and to be light in the darkness. And Christians have all sorts of different views on Halloween, but nevertheless, a lot of Christians in the UK are concerned about that kind of time of year, and they want to be a light, and they want to promote goodness and light, and they're concerned when they see society going into what they think is dark. I mean, do you have a view on that? On how, you know, does Halloween have an effect on your ministry in terms of increased sort of activity or calls, or, you know, how do you navigate that?
Well, you know, there's a lot more activity during that time of season. It's because, you know, that everything's talking about witches and witchcraft and the movies that are on. And you're going to have all the unbelievers, the young children, all, you know, looking that way. I don't necessarily look down on that kind of evangelism. I'll tell you, if that's really your mission. We did something years ago. You made me remember. I think it was 2014. They used to have something here called Scare Fest or something on one of the channels, where they have 31 days of horror movies. We did something called Seek Fest, where we went out and we did evangelism 31 days in a row. I did something 2 years ago where I took I did a community event in my backyard. And we had people come. I actually had Glenda from the story in the book, The Connecticut Story, her and her sister come out. We talked about the event. I showed the children, I had certain things from cases that I talked to them about, a lot of teenagers, a lot of people in their teens and 20s, and explained to them the dangers. And I got to talk about Christ. Now, I'll tell you this. The next day was a Sunday. I was at church, and I get a phone call from my neighbor that some girl, he went and saw, they dropped something off on my steps. And what it was a bag full of tarot cards. She got rid of them. And she said, I'm never touching these again. So I think that we need to take these kind of opportunities to reach people. And that's why, you know, the title of the book was done purposely, you know, called into darkness, because really that's the world we live in. You know, when we're called by Christ, we're called and sent back out into that darkness. It's not just all, you know, fun and games and sunshine. We need to go out and find the people who are like us. So my wife and I feel like this ministry is where God's using us to go into that dark part of the world, you know, and pull people out.
That's an amazing story. And sadly, we're out of time. But Chris DeFlorio, thank you very much for being a guest on the show today.
Sam, thank you. Great time.
You've been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.